All right, Alexander, let's revisit the OPCW and the attacks in Syria, the chemical attacks that took place in Syria. And we've documented very, very well the corruption that has taken place in the OPCW to hide the fact that Assad and the Syrian government was not behind at least the chemical attacks in Douma. Four whistleblowers came forward and exposed that lie. But the OPCW, the deep state, the warmongers, they just do not give up. This is from RT. Alexander, OPCW points the finger at Syrian government for 2017 chemical attacks amid whistleblowers scandal. Let me read you the first couple of paragraphs. The OPCW has issued its first report explicitly blaming Syria's government for chemical attacks on civilians, pointing to three incidents in 2017 and saying there are reasonable grounds to believe the Air Force was responsible. Quote, attacks of such a strategic nature would have only taken place on the basis of orders from the higher authorities of the Syrian Arab Republic Military Command. Investigation and Identification Team, IIT, Coordinator Santiago Onate Laborde said, in the end, the ITT was unable to identify any other plausible explanation. He added, the chemical weapons watchdog maintains that Syrian Arab Air Force pilots flying a Sukhoi Su-22 military plane dropped a sarin bomb in southern Dameana on March 24, 2017. On March 25th, the OPCW claims a helicopter belonging to the Syrian Arab Air Force dropped a chlorine cylinder on Tamena Hospital, which went through the roof and ruptured. Another bomb containing sarin was dropped in southern Dameana on March 30th by an Su-22 military plane, the report said. OPCW Director General Fernando Arias noted in a statement that the IIT is, quote, not a judicial or quasi-judicial body with the authority to assign individual criminal responsibility, end quote. It is now up to the Executive Council and the Conference of the State Parties of the Chemical Weapons Convention, the United Nations Secretary General, and the international community as a whole to take any further action they deem appropriate and necessary. Boy, they do not give up, do they?
Well, of course they don't. I mean, this has been programmed in this because, of course, what happened? Can I just explain a few things? I mean, there was a couple of years ago, I mean, for a long time, there was a sort of joint mechanism, the JIM, which is the OPCW and a team of UN inspectors or so-called inspectors who used to do this precise sort of work. They used to come along, review various incidents in Syria, alleged chemical weapons attacks in Syria, and in all but a very small number of cases, they attributed them to the Syrian government. Now, the Russians became extremely angry about this because they said these investigations weren't appropriately conducted. And when the time came for the JIM mechanism to be renewed by the UN Security Council, the Russians vetoed it. And then, of course, what subsequently happened was that the Western powers decided that they would go to the OPCW, get its charter changed, extend its remit, and make it into an investigation and attribution agency. Now, that is not what the OPCW was set out to be. I mean, this is a complete change in the nature of its remit. The OPCW had been previously a coordinating body managing and administering the convention or the prohibition. The Convention for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. It was not supposed to be a kind of investigative police agency that would go around and issue reports of this kind. And there are fundamental problems in it doing that, because of course it becoming an investigative body in this way, first of all, undermines its status as a neutral party. And secondly, it means that it can't be able, it can't provide impartial evidence as a kind of forensic expert to any future investigative body that might exist. Nonetheless, despite strong objections from Russia, despite strong objections from China and a number of other countries, this change in the remit was made, and this is the result. And of course, to be very clear, the Western powers did that because they know that the OPCW will do exactly what they wanted to do, as it did with Duma, as it did in the investigation it carried out in Duma, and that it would attribute incidents to the Syrian government. That's what it was supposed to do. And I'm going to say something, if we were not all completely focused on this massive corona health crisis, which is now having this massive effect around the world, I predict that this would have been big news, and it would have led to more angry exchanges between the West and Russia and the West and China, and there might have been even calls for sanctions and all those sort of things. But because, and in fact, Arias's comments about it, you know, being taken up by the international community show that. But because we have this huge health crisis, it isn't working out like that, because frankly, very few people are interested in Syria at this present moment in time. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be interested in this. Let's first of all come back to what you said right at the start of this program. We have discussed at very great length the total collapse of the OPCW's procedures in it looking at the Duma incident, and which have been exposed not by the Russians, not by the Syrians, not even by alternative or independent media people like us, but by its own employees, by people working for it, by its own inspectors, by its own officials, by people who've come forward as whistleblowers and who were extremely concerned about the way in which the entire Duma investigation was pressured and twisted into delivering a report which completely contradicted the opinions of the actual inspectors who went to Duma and actually examined the place itself. We've had people like Ian Henderson, who did an engineering report, who cast doubt, very strong doubt, about whether the two chlorine cylinders that were identified, if they were chlorine cylinders, could have actually fallen from the roof. He suggested that they were far more likely to have been placed there. We've had evidence from the forensic chemical people that the symptoms of the people who died in Duma are not consistent with poisoning from chlorine, which is what OPCW wants to claim. And we've also had information that, in fact, the amounts of chlorine that were found in the area were not extensive enough to really explain an attack of this nature. So we've got this accumulation of evidence from Duma that contradicts what the OPCW is saying, and the OPCW's response has been to actually stigmatize and smear the inspectors and the whistleblowers. It doesn't even have a whistleblower policy of its own, and it's acted to try and suppress all the contradictory information that's been coming out. So given that is so, how can we possibly place any faith in the results of this latest report attributing these incidents in 2017, in March 2017, to the Syrian government? And I just want to say a few things about them. But before I do that, how can we assume that the OPCW, which was not set up to be an investigative and attributive agency anyway, and which whose failings have been exposed so starkly by its own people, how can we assume that what it says to us about what happened in Syria or allegedly happened in Syria in March 2017 can possibly be true? Now, I'm going to say to make a few very quick points about this report. To the extent that I can work out, this hasn't been done by actually investigating the scenes of these incidents. There's been no inspectors or researchers gone to the actual alleged crime scenes. They're all based upon information provided to the OPCW, supposedly by witnesses. But of course, you know, again, we have all these problems with witnesses from this area. In this area, again, there's all sorts of issue about provenances of samples, all of that. So it's clear that we don't have an investigation carried out in the place itself. It's all been done remotely. And I get to say one very last thing. The fact that the OPCW claims to be able to identify specific types of aircraft that supposedly dropped these bombs, you know, Sukhoi 22 fighter bombers, Syrian helicopters, and those sort of things, it's most unlikely that witnesses would know that, would be able to provide that kind of information in any great detail. At least civilian witnesses would not. So we're looking at military people, in other words, fighters, in other words, jihadi fighters. They might be able to identify aircraft with that kind of precision. But more likely, it seems to me, we're looking at information provided by the intelligence agencies of the West. And that, again, is consistent with what happened with the Duma incident, where we know that the inspectors were made to meet three US officials who told them what supposedly had happened. And presumably they were from the intelligence agencies of the US. So it looks to me as if it's based on a mixture of information from our usual friends, the jihadi fighters, no doubt the white helmets too, and also ultimately and finally from the Western intelligence agencies.
Completely fabricated.
Well, yes, and can I just say, I mean, you know, they say reasonable, that this is all based on, these are reasonable findings. But what is reasonable? I mean, reasonable is a word that you can put all kinds of, it doesn't mean so much. I mean, in a court of law, reasonable, beyond reasonable doubt, has a certain meaning. What meaning can it have for an agency like the OPCW, which, as Arias himself admitted, is not a court and whose findings are not subject to review and are not subject to legal standards of proof? Yeah. It's acting as, you know, judge and jury and, you know, investigator in its own cause.
Yeah, I'm sure that there were people on the ground, Alexander, that saw the jets and said, "Oh, that's a Sukhoi. That's an Su-22. Give me a break. The whole thing's a joke. The whole thing is a joke. The OPCW needs to be torn down. Period. Torn down.
There are other elements of this which are.
Why are they releasing this now? Why are they releasing this now?
This was slated to be released. I mean, we've been expecting this for several months now. I mean, they'd signposted that it would come out around this time. But I think the reason was, I mean, I think this would have led to more pressure on Syria. I think there would have been, this would have been used if we'd not had a corona crisis as an excuse to ramp up sanctions on Syria even further, and perhaps even refer Syria in some form to just subject it to some kind of judicial process. Most unlikely that's going to happen now. But when I say judicial process, a judicial process of a certain kind. But can I also say something before we finish on the actual report itself? There's two things that immediately stood out to me. Why would the Syrian military drop a chlorine bomb when they're apparently dropping sarin bombs? Chlorine is not a very effective weapon. I mean, this has been established ever since the First World War. So if they're able to drop sarin bombs, why are they also wasting their time dropping chlorine bombs? This doesn't make a great deal of sense. And I can't help but think that that's partly intended to give credence to stories about the use of chlorine bombs in other occasions. But it doesn't make any kind of military sense. It doesn't make much military sense in this particular alleged incident either. And the second is this extraordinary claim that, you know, because we have reasonable belief, we the OPCW have reasonable belief that chemical weapons were used in these places in March 2017, that must mean that the highest levels of the Syrian government, which of course means President Assad, you can decode that, that's what it means, must have ordered it himself. Firstly, why would Bashar al-Assad have ordered a chemical attack like this on what was apparently not a very important place? And secondly, that is entirely an argument based on speculation and inference. It's not even an they have no findings that can justify that kind of conclusion. That's purely a guess. So a proper investigator doesn't guess. And yet that's what they've just done.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Alexander, I think they released this stuff now for the exact reason that everyone is too busy to scrutinize it. That's what I think.
Well,
maybe it was slated, but I also asked myself if this was, you know, really that important, they could have waited another month or two in order to, you know, put this out into the public forum. Maybe they release it now because, you know, no one's looking. They can release it now. And then 6 months down the line, the mainstream media will run with the OPCW said this 6 months ago, and Assad must go, and Assad is guilty.
But they will release more reports. This is only the first of many, I suspect. I mean, there'll be ones on Han Shekun, there'll be ones on Duma, no doubt. There'll be lots of them. They might even go back to 2013 and talk about e-scooter also. So, I mean, you know, we mustn't assume that this is the end of it. It's only the beginning. I mean, as I said, this one hasn't attracted a great deal of attention because of the way the crisis is, you know, the health crisis is unraveling. But as I said, you can look forward to others.
None of them should attract any attention. None of them should be believed. I believe the legal term for it is fruit of the poisonous tree.
Yeah, a fruit of the poisonous tree. Exactly. I mean, it's exactly what it is. It is. That describes it precisely. I mean, you have an agency which is completely compromised. Its internal procedures have broken down, and its remit has been extended to get it to do things it was never set up to do.
There you go.
And it's clearly been captured.
It's clearly been captured. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to my thinking that it needs to be torn down and rebuilt.
Absolutely. Well, you know, at some point it will be, because to be very clear about it, with the changing balance of power in the world, it won't survive. I mean, it signed its own death warrant by going down.
Good. Good riddance. Good. All right. Alexander Mercure is editor-in-chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like button. Also, check us out on iTunes for an audio copy of this video. Also, SoundCloud as well. You'll get an audio copy of this video, and please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps us out a whole lot. And also go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, polo t-shirts. What else do we have, Alexander? Oh, ebooks.
Ebooks. I come to the ebook because that's extremely important. Because we're doing a major project with our ebooks to help and sustain the health workers, especially in the US, but we're looking to broaden that, and any suggestions we get from our viewers will be excellent. But what we found is that we feel very strongly that, you know, in the middle of this health crisis, the people on the front lines, the healthcare workers in the US and in Europe and elsewhere, who are basically holding the line against the spread of this disease, and who are in many, many cases putting themselves at risk, and who are becoming in many cases also exhausted. I know that because I'm hearing from health workers themselves. They need all the support we can. And we are a small channel, relatively speaking. We're getting bigger. We want to get bigger, but we're still quite small. So we said to ourselves, what can we do, you know, which is within our resources? Well, we are going to provide all the money we make from the sales of our ebooks to support these people who are working on the front lines. And we're going to do it in the US by providing it to a charitable fund, which arranges also for people in catering, the catering industry, which is also in severe crisis, to provide food for these people who absolutely need it. So that way, we hope in our own small way, but you know, every little bit counts, to support the economy, and at the same time to help the health workers. So that's what we're doing. And all our ebooks, and we've got four at the moment, one on Russiagate, one on Ukrainegate, one on Brexit, and one on Epstein. All the money from the sales of those books goes to those funds. And we are looking, and we invite our viewers to suggest other funds, not just from Europe, but from around the world, from wherever, which we can also commit funding to. So if you buy one of our ebooks, you are helping health workers, and you're also helping the catering industry in the US, which is made up of small businesses, not, you know, big titanic ones. And can I just also say, we have more ebooks in the pipeline. So just to alert you to all of that. We don't just have ebooks, we also have all our other great things in the Durant. We have our amazing magic mugs. This one in particular that I often have. This has now become actually slowly my default mug, but it's because it's one of my favorites. It looks so elegant, but ultimately all our mugs are, and I change my habits with my mugs quite often. Sometimes it's one, sometimes the other, but you can see it's got the double-headed eagle there of the Russian Federation. It's beautifully made. It's strong and light. It's got an amazing porcelain body. As I've explained many times on many programs, I am the absolute world expert on the subject of mugs. I know more about them than everybody else because of the vast lakes of tea and coffee I've drunk over the course of my life from mugs. And I can say without any hesitation, these are the best. And of course, it's not just mugs we have. We've got polo shirts like the one I'm wearing now, this incredibly stylish and elegant polo shirt with a double-headed eagle of the Durant embroidered in, different from the Russian one, by the way, and in many colors, all 100% cotton, all fantastically durable, amazingly elegant. You can wear them in all sorts of places. You can wear them around the house. You can wear them, as I've worn them, to really wonderful social occasions. And you can wear them going out on sunny days, walking your dogs. And the days for that will come when we can do that freely and happily. And that's not that far off either. And we don't just have polo shirts. We've got T-shirts, long-sleeved and short-sleeved, also 100% cotton. We've got V-neck shirts. We've got hats, hoodies, and stickers. All of these things of amazing quality. All, by the way, fantastically durable. So come to the Durant, support the healthcare workers, support the caterers in the US who are in such trouble, support the Duran itself, and be the owner of these proud things. So come to our shop. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to thedurantshop.com. You'll find a link in the description box down below. Alexander Mercurs, editor-in-chief of The Durant. Thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.